Welcome to Yes Indeed Pod, a podcast about indie tabletop role-playing games where I interview creators about their games and inspirations and about the theory, process and practice of game design. My name is Mark Shepherd, your host today and always, and your friendly local indie enthusiast. Today we're talking to Adrián Mejía, aka Dr. Maniac, an Ecuadorian creator creating games about how cities and cultures are amazing, and a setting guide called Caboa, which is highlighting some of the most incredible creators from all across Latin America. This was a wonderful and enlightening chat, and I'm stoked to share it with you. Now that's out of my head and into yours, let's talk indie. So, today we're talking to Adrián Mejía. Hi there, Adrián, and welcome to the podcast.
Hi, I'm really happy to be here.
Adrián, would you like to take a minute to introduce yourself and let us know what you do in indie tabletop role-playing games?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm Adrián Mejía. I'm pretty new to the indie role-playing scene. I started a project about a year ago and kind of been trying to get myself in the scene since then, getting connected to the community and having a few smaller projects in the meantime.
Yeah. What kind of projects have you been working on in the meantime? We'll get to your big project in a minute.
Yeah, absolutely. I've participated in a couple of Latin RPG jams.
Mm-hmm.
I've actually created a couple of expansions to a couple of Latine RPG games, including Mini BX and Here There Be Monsters.
Very cool. Yes, that is a very cool game.
Yeah, I was really excited to work on that one.
What did you contribute to that? Because that's a really fun game.
Yeah, I actually just released last week an expansion called Here There Be Quiteños, which moves the setting of the game into the city of Quito, which is the city that I'm from. So I added a whole bunch of creatures from our stories here in the city, a couple of places and artifacts that are related to our folklore here, our legends, our urban myths, stuff like that.
That's so cool. Like taking something that's quite generalized and then making it super, super locale specific. I think that's really interesting and would really get across the feel of a city, I think, talking about it through its folklore and urban myths. Yeah, I'm super down with that.
Yeah, I had a lot of fun making it. I am obsessed with the concept of like the city and how every city has its own almost like life to it. So I really tried to capture some of how Quito feels in this pretty small module.
How does Quito feel in terms of Here There Be Monsters?
Well, it's really interesting. It's got a lot of history to it. It's got a lot of places where if you're fictionalizing the city, you can put the occult over here or say this is where monsters gather, stuff like that.
Yeah.
We have a lot of history. Like, I mean, one of the factions I added was the Inquisition because the Inquisition had a very big headquarters here during the colonial era. So I thought that would be interesting. What if the Inquisition was hunting down monsters?
That is really interesting. Yeah, that's a pretty cool sideswipe. I love Quito, I should say. I've been there a while ago. It's probably very different now. But it's a really very fun, very vibrant and super historical and interesting city to walk around and kind of absorb. So I'm really interested to see how that pans out in game form. So kudos to you.
Thank you.
I think one of the things that sort of leans into a little bit is like how role-playing games are played in Ecuador. We've had folks from Argentina, we've had folks from Brazil on the podcast in the last couple of months. Tell us about the role-playing game scene in Ecuador or in Quito, you know, just down your street, who knows?
Yeah, so I've actually been in Quito a couple of years. We've traveled back and forth between Quito and the US and other places. And it's been a little hard to get into the scene, you know, thanks to the pandemic and all everything that's going on these days.
That's true, yeah.
But I'd say D&D has been pretty big here. I've gotten into a couple of groups. We've played some D&D. The people have been interested in like more indie sorts of games, but game design as a whole, like creation, creatives, that sort of thing as a whole haven't really come up that much here. Like people are mostly consuming and not creating.
Yeah.
So I feel people have been more leaning towards things that are already like really well established, like D&D.
There's quite a strong link, and you've sort of hinted at it there, between Ecuador and the United States for various historical reasons. Do you think there's a kind of reason then that the cultural hegemony of the United States kind of exerts its influence on the role-playing game scene in Ecuador as well?
Oh, absolutely. No, I think that's a major factor. It's interesting because we've traveled around South America a bit. Whenever I visit another country, I love to get games that are made there, mostly board games that I found.
Yeah.
But then when we came back to Ecuador, I was like, I'm going to buy board games made in Ecuador. And honestly, I've barely found any. It's like,
oh, right.
There's a lot less creativity happening, and it's really sad. It really saddens me. And I think it has a lot to do with what you were saying, just hegemony, like the global culture that the US creates, just being what people spend their time thinking about.
Yeah. Certainly when I was in Ecuador, we're talking like 15 years ago now, but, you know, the people I was interacting with were complaining that, you know, the smart people, the creative people were leaving the country. They were going to live in New York. There was a big brain drain, and perhaps there's a kind of creative drain as well, you know, which would be really sad to see, you know, to see a scene didn't have its own games, didn't have its own game design ideas in a way that, you know, I feel like perhaps we've spoken about Argentina, we've even spoken about Brazil, have a different feel, and they have their own game design culture. And it would be really cool if you could start that in Ecuador, you know.
Quite a weight on my shoulders, but I would love to succeed.
It's a tall order, yeah, yeah. But you're starting to do that. And I'm wondering then if people kind of have reacted to Here There Be Quiteños. You know, you're representing us. We're more interested, therefore, to play this quirky little indie game rather than D&D. Or have you not kind of reached that level of saturation?
You know, I've been meaning to shop it around and show it around at different hobby stores and, you know, local game stores and stuff.
Uh-huh.
I literally just released it last week, and we're potty training right now, which is why I tried to release it quickly. So we've been quite busy, but once that's done, hopefully I'll have a little more time outside of the house.
Okay, that's fair enough. Personally, I feel like when you make a product that can relate to, that they're going to pick it up and be more interested in it than if it's just like some weird little indie game made by, I don't know, some weird dude called Marx who lives in Britain. Who knows? Now, on that front, I know that you have a much bigger project. Do you want to tell us just a little bit about that project and what it means to you?
Oh, yeah, I'd love to talk about it. I'm working on a setting. Right now, it's most of the mechanics are for D&D 5th edition. That's what people are playing.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm really hoping to make it something more independent, something that's that can be in many systems, called Koboa, a setting that is based on the peoples and the cultures and the stories that we tell in South America.
Yeah.
My dream is to have like every South American feel seen and represented in this setting.
Incredible. That sounds absolutely amazing. What sort of influences are you working on there? Like, where are you taking your ideas from?
So I've been doing a lot of research and taking ideas from lots of places, researching peoples of many different nations here, different cultures as well. I've had a lot of an easier time working on stuff that's closest to me, specifically, you know, like mestizo type of culture, Quiteña sort of culture.
Yeah.
But I've been trying to build a team with lots of people from other cultures, other countries, Afro-Latina people, indigenous people.
Yeah. Yeah.
And trying to make situations where they can each add their voices. So I'm trying to have lots of different people writing for it, doing the world building themselves.
Yeah.
So that everyone can have a voice.
That sounds incredible. And does it feel like, is it a completely separate fantasy world that's built on elements from across Latin America? Or is it kind of Latin America transposed into a fantasy world?
Yeah, we're trying to make it I think they call it a secondary world, a world that's not based on, you know, planet Earth, but it's own world.
Yeah.
Inspired by Latin American cultures and histories, and particularly the history, because I think that's a big part of what makes us. So from a high level, the main separations I have in this setting are the five territories, which are each based off of different elements of South American peoples and cultures. We have Novpo, which is a nation made of the descendants, what once was a major empire before the colonizers came.
Yeah.
And it's kind of based on my understanding of mostly Quichua and Quechua culture.
Mm-hmm.
Some people that I'm working with who come from those cultures as well are writing most of the story there.
Yeah.
You have the Majgot Accords, which is this other territory, which is made up of hundreds of other native nations that are in a cooperative agreement with each other. So they're all sovereign, but they're all working together to present a single front to the rest of the world that's based off of some other indigenous nations of South America. You have Gran Marsella, which is based off of mestizo culture specifically. So it's the most like Quito of the five territories.
Mm-hmm.
There's Atzatray, which is based off of Afro-Latina culture. So the story there is just people came from another continent. I've been working on this with some Afro-Latina people, and we're changing a little bit of the story. They didn't think having like a big slavery narrative would be very like it would just be more trauma porn.
Yes. Yeah.
So we're changing the story a little bit, and these people came from another continent. They already fought off the colonizers in their own continent, and they were asked for help, so they come and they help the indigenous people drive the colonizers out of their lands, and then they establish a nation in their own little part of Kaboa. And finally, there is Nueva Vardia, which is what's left of the colonizers. They were pushed to a corner, they fortified themselves, and they created their own nation, and now they're trying to like deal with their legacy of having been colonizers of this continent and now needing to live with the people of this continent. And like, what does that mean? Do they need to make amends? Yeah. Some of them don't want to.
It's interesting that you mention mestizo culture, because that's, you were talking about it on Twitter the other day, and it's something that I think Europeans don't understand, and possibly like folks from the United States don't understand as well. It's quite different.
I have to first say I don't have any answers here. It's something I've been trying to figure out and
don't quite understand,
but like people, particularly in the States, my experience has been, view anything that's not whiteness as a separate race.
Yeah.
You know, if you're not white, then you're this other race. And they like to put us Latine people in a single bucket of the Latine race. But Latine isn't really a race, you know? Like, Latin America is made up of so many different people. And our history shows that. We started off with several different indigenous nations that lived here and were in all of South America, and then the colonizers came, they brought with them their own culture, their own ways of doing things.
Yeah.
They brought enslaved people from various different parts of Africa. There was a lot of there was a lot of children being made from parents of these different cultures. I feel like in American history, at least from what I've studied of it, there was like this whole concept of the blood quantum. Like if you're a little bit of this non-white race, then you're not white at all. Mm. But the Spanish and the Portuguese, I think, had a different concept where they had this hierarchy of different categories of people based on how close you were to whiteness.
Yeah.
That I think ended up in more mixed people, which, you know, that from there we have the term mestizo, which literally means mixed person. We kind of got a culture of our own. Like we were put in a bucket that was not white, it wasn't indigenous, it wasn't black, and we kind of created our own culture out of the different elements that were around us.
I think that's fascinating. Like, there's so much interesting stuff to dig into there that I am completely underqualified to talk about. But it's really interesting to kind of lean into a culture that maybe you don't see represented. Like, I think we do see more and more games nowadays which are from an indigenous perspective, and obviously that's
amazing.
A North America indigenous perspective in general, and we see a lot of games from a white perspective, we see a lot of games from we see some games now from a black perspective as well, but this kind of mixed person perspective, if you like, is, that's really interesting to kind of lean into. And I don't know, it must feel really fascinating to kind of touch on all those cultural myths and cultural touchstones that are perhaps inaccessible even to some people in Latin America.
Yeah, it's been a really fun project, and it's also been one that I've been trying to be wary about, because I don't know much about like my ancestors. If I'm like the average Latin American, I come equally from white Europeans, indigenous people, and African people. But does that mean that I can take elements from any of those cultures, or is that also appropriation? Like, there's so many questions to be answered there, and so many pitfalls to be careful about, because we do have our own culture as mestizos, and we do marginalize other cultures as well systemically, which means that it could be very easy to appropriate other stories.
I see where you're coming from, yeah.
Well, at the same time, wondering, like, how much of this story is also mine, you know?
So when you write something for mestizo culture, you know, are you taking aspects from your own culture and transposing those, or are you trying to not appropriate but be influenced by the cultures that you are the mixed descendants of?
So for that, there's the mestizo territory. I try to do as much just our own culture as we can. Like, what does it mean, like, be a person in Quito who is mestizo? What does it mean to be maybe a mestizo person in Rio de Janeiro, which my mom's from, so I have a little experience there.
Right.
And less taking from other cultures that I'm not as familiar with.
Hmm.
But there is a space for those cultures, which other people I'm working with are filling in for those other territories that I mentioned.
That's really interesting and makes a ton of sense. And it's just fascinating to hear about this with a little bit of knowledge of what South American culture is. What a small part of South American culture might look like and feel like to be a part of for a while. You know, are you creating monsters? Are you creating...
Yeah, we're creating a lot of D&D elements. So we're creating classes. We have, like, instead of races, we have this thing called forms, which I can go into more later. It's very different. But we're also creating a bunch of creatures to populate the world with, based off of a lot of our stories from all the different cultures.
That's so cool. Yeah.
Yeah, we're trying to add our own spin to them, so that it's not like, oh, we took this creature from your religion or from your spirituality, and now we're just putting it in this game. Because, well, first of all, can very easily be appropriative. Cool. Yeah. And next of all, there's so many stories. You know, in some places there are these creatures that the people there would tell you, oh, that's just a story about this creature that eats people. And somewhere else, that creature doesn't eat people, and it isn't considered like a story, but it's considered like a spiritual being.
Oh, that's really interesting. Yeah.
There's no way to like do them justice, you know?
You can't generalize a creature anyway. Yeah. I mean, that's fascinating in itself, and like could be gamified in a really interesting way. Like just that idea of mythology being very locale dependent, which I think kind of leans into a little bit what we were talking about earlier. Like, that's completely fascinating, yeah. I'm very interested in that.
I mentioned forms a little earlier. So D&D has always had this problem that people are kind of trying to address now with bioessentialism.
Yeah.
The idea that, like, if you're biologically this thing, then you're expected to be this intelligent or this strong and et cetera. And kind of like, when translated to the real world, can obviously cause a lot of harm to marginalized communities.
Yes, definitely.
The idea we came up with to deal with that is to just have part of the story be these magical items that can transform your form. And different cultures create their own. And instead of being born a certain way, they create something that reflects their values or reflects the needs of their communities.
Right.
They might say, we need to fly, so we're going to create a form that has wings. Or they might say, for us, you know, like, the underground is sacred, so we will create a form that can traverse the underground well.
Yeah, yeah.
Characters can change their forms in the game, so it's not, like, something that's, like, set in stone. And they can mix them together, which was important to me, because that kind of creates this feeling of, like, the mixed mestizo experience.
Yeah. Is that, like, territory dependent, or is that more localized than that? Like, might one village have a different set of forms to another village?
Within the story, we're trying to make it like be a little varied. So one village might have a particular, like, they're called maps, these magical items, that have a particular form map that is works for that village. But at the same time, like, a whole nation might have, like, their capital city might host a bunch of maps that people can come to and use.
Yeah, that's fascinating. And you're working here with quite a big and very diverse team from across Latin America. Do you want to drop any names onto that we can get excited about?
Yeah, so Daniel Delgado is the name he goes with on Twitter, is a very cool Quechua guy who's been doing a lot of writing and a lot of some design work as well lately.
Yeah.
We've been working with a few artists from all over. Guilherme Chaves is a Brazilian artist, as well as this person called And. I always forget their last name. Oh, And Borges, I think it is in Portuguese. And Angela Entriago is a really talented artist. You should check her out on Twitter. At La Muela Muerte on Twitter. Guilherme Chaves, who I mentioned, at Chaves Ilustra. Ali R, at Cosmic Amazon, without a no. Their art has just been breathtaking. Ali makes just this amazing faces. I've been really impressed with Aner Urra, who I don't know if he has a Twitter presence. He's somebody I found in Chile, actually, who I've been communicating with an email. A local artist.
That's really cool. So folks from all across Latin America. That's really interesting. Yeah, I'm really fascinated by all of that. What's the kind of production timescale on that? You know, when can we expect to see this in the world?
Oh man, I would love to tell you. We're trying to. We're trying to get a crowdfunding started to hopefully be able do a lot of, like, front load a lot of our artwork and stuff, because that's obviously the most expensive part usually, is producing, like, all the amazing art.
Yes, definitely.
So we've been looking for partners to like, get a Kickstarter or some other form of crowdfunding done. We're still figuring out what we're going to do. We're thinking we're probably going to aim for quarter one of 2023 to launch.
Okay, well, folks should keep their eyes peeled for that. And if you are in quarter one of 2023, then go find this campaign, because, you know, it sounds absolutely incredible. Even if it is the fifth edition, you know. I'm only joking.
Oh, no.
No, it's cool. It's cool. No, I understand, because, like, it's the most accessible for... It sounds like it's the most accessible for people in your country.
For sure.
And it's the most accessible for people outside your country as well, not going to lie. Like, fifth edition is big business nowadays. And it's really interesting to see that you are trying to deconstruct some of the more harmful tropes that D&D perhaps seeks to perpetuate through its mechanics. I particularly like that what you're doing feels very anti-colonial. Like, you've explicitly stated that. And that's really cool, because I don't know how aware people are of how deeply colonial
some of the principles behind 5th edition feel sometimes, and whether or not that is harmful to people in colonized nations.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. And, you know, we're trying to decolonize as much as we can, but it's hard to tell just how much we can.
Yeah, but I think you've done it in kind of the right level by pushing back against those colonizers through, you know, various alliances and groupings. And that feels really interesting. And that so you can tell the story of people separated from their colonizers. And that's interesting. But also perhaps be able to tell the story of maybe what it feels like to do decolonizing. Is there anything in that, or am I reading too much into what you said?
I think you're right, yeah. I think we want to create spaces where people can play as, like, maybe ex-colonizers or people who are trying to figure out, like, what their role in society is. Like, if you're already in a society that's marginalizing, what can you do as a person against that?
Yeah, I don't know, because sometimes you hear about descendants of colonizers who say, we didn't choose to be here, but we are here, and how do we reconcile that? And I think that that's maybe an interesting, fruitful void to look into.
No, yeah, definitely.
Again, I'm just like projecting onto what you told me. Definitely, definitely fascinated to check this out. So
I hope so.
Q1 2023. There's a lot that I'm really fascinated and interested by, but I think it's going to have to wait until the book is there, because it sounds like it's going to be amazing, and it sounds like you've got absolutely shed loads of really interesting artists. And actually, you have a newsletter available, don't you, or like a mailing list, and some of the art on that page is just breathtaking. It just looks incredible. So I genuinely cannot wait to see what this looks like in a in a finally published version. So, you know, big kudos, and I'm really fascinated by the team that you're assembling and putting together. Yeah, it sounds like a really great project.
I'm really excited as well. I hope it goes beyond anyone's expectations.
Yeah, I hope it goes beyond my expectations, because then it would be a truly wild project. Fantastic. So, Adrian, would you like to tell us where we can find you and where we can find more information about Kaboa on the internet?
Absolutely. You can follow me on Twitter at Ductomaniac, Ductomaniac. Or you can sign up for our mailing list at kaboa.mailchimpsites.com. Kaboa is KOBOA.
And yeah, I guess all that remains for me to say is thank you very much for coming on Yes Indeed Pod in this month of Yes in RPG Latamed. And fantastically, good luck with the creation of Kaboa.
Thank you so much, and thank you so much for having me. It's been a really good time.
Thanks for listening, and thanks again to Adrian for the interview. As always, you can find all of the links in the episode description. Next time, we're talking to my good friend, Argentinian artist and editor Nymphael, whose work with the Far Horizons Corp and for the indie zine has been amazing to be associated with. Tune in 2 weeks to find out more. This week's episode has been kindly sponsored by Beyond Cataclysm Games and the What Is Roleplay podcast. Beyond Cataclysm is a friendly little macro publisher and zine distro who aim to combine heart and excellence in all their projects. Check out beyondcataclysm.co.uk to check out the web store, featuring physical copies of many of the fine RPGs you've heard discussed here on our Yes Indeed pod, as well as hundreds of others. I'm told they also put in freebies into pretty much every order, so, you know, that's really nice. Beyond Cataclysm also runs the What Is Roleplay podcast, a beginner-friendly exploration of the world of indie tabletop roleplay. Each episode features a topic such as dice, character creation, or death, with examples taken from across the scene and an actual play with a guest presenter, including next episode, yours truly. You can listen on the Beyond Cataclysm site or on a podcast app of your choosing. Finally, check us out at Beyond Cataclysm on social media. They like conversations, photos of dogs, and seeing the cool stuff that you do. This week, I'd like to thank some of my incredible Patreon supporters: Hesan Yongdi, Sam Armstrong, Beyond Cataclysm Games, Georgie Batts, Sam Lay, Jack Blair, and Peter Ike. Thank you all so much. We couldn't do what we do without you. And you, yes, you can get a regular shout-out and joyful thanks too if you go to patreon.com/yesindeedpod and sign up today. you'll get access to our Discord server where we can hang out and chat, and even join monthly editing streams and the Yes Indeed Pod Book Club. Most of the money will go directly to creators rather than to me, so you'll be investing directly in the indie scene, helping to make it a healthy and inclusive place for years to come. And if you can't commit regularly, you can always help out by rating and reviewing the show wherever you find your podcasts, or by donating through the Ko-Fi page at ko-fi.com/yesindeedpod. Of course, you can always reach out to me through Twitter at yesindeedpod, that's YESINDIEDPOD. I'd love dearly to hear from you. Lastly, music credits. All music is taken from Be Quiet by Yatsar from the Free Music Archive, released under Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 International License. Thanks, Yatsar. Until next time, remember, does indie need you? Yes, indeed.